Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
The Dave Plyer Show.
Your best friend is Bob Newhart. I think another genius and one of the great comedians of all time. And I only say it's a little incongruous because your styles, you're both extremely nice, decent people in real life.
Thank you.
But your styles are so different.
Yeah, well, yeah, Bob's a brainy kind of comedian, and I'm a kind of guy that gets laughs. And,
All right, it is Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. So tonight we are celebrating the legacy of legendary comedian Don Rickles on what would have been his 96th birthday and 5 years after his passing in 2017. His best friend was another legendary comedian and Chicago's very own Bob Newhart. And it's no surprise that the two were also close friends. While their styles of comedy may have been different, the pair shared a strong bond, including their wives, that lasted a half a century. And spoiler alert, the TV classic The Bob Newhart Show turns 50 this fall. And to talk about that friendship and much more is comedy icon and my friend Bob Newhart. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Dave. Good to hear you.
Thank you, sir. You know, how are you, my friend? How's the weather out in on the West Coast these days?
The other day I walked outside. It was like it was about seven o'clock at night, and it was gorgeous. Oh. It just was absolutely gorgeous, and it reminded me that's why we live in California, because I grew up, spent 29 years in Chicago. I got drafted, and they sent me to California, and I said, how long has this been going on? I thought you had to freeze to death in the winter. And it was like, what is it, 72?
It's 43 here and raining. 43 and raining, Bob. So it's, yeah.
I know those days. Yeah, very well.
Yeah, not the best. But, you know, at least baseball is back. I actually got to go to the only Cubs game I went to so far this year. They won against Pittsburgh 21-0. And it was 80 degrees out. It was the most beautiful day in Chicago that day. 21-0, and then a little bit of a rough patch ever since, you know?
I don't know if I ever told you this story, but my wife and I, Ginny and I, this was 30 years ago, maybe more. We went to a Cub ball game, right? And we're sitting there. And between innings, these kids had run up and they'd ask for the autograph, and you say, during innings.
Sure.
Then you sign away. So I never really thought about it. So years later, I'm doing the Tonight Show at NBC Burbank, and the Richard Pryor Show is on, and the guest is John Belushi. Hmm. So I'm in the men's dressing room, and knock at the door, it's John Belushi. And he said, hi, I'm John Belushi. I said, John, I know who you are. I admire your work. He said, do you remember going to a Cub ball game and a bunch of kids ran up and wanted your autograph? I said, yeah, sure, my wife and I, yeah. He said, I was one of those kids.
Wow. How cool is that? Something you'll always remember. And, you know, you look at how many people look up to you in the world of comedy and television for what you've accomplished all your life, Bob.
Thank you. Absolutely.
You know, your best friend, Don Rickles, you knew him better than anybody. And, you know, I know you know this, and he told his friends, and he told me, you know, I got to know him. I mean, you've known him a long time. I got to get to know him maybe the last 7-8 years of his life. And he always said when he was saying goodbye, he'd say, hey, and he grabbed my hand and he'd be like, keep my name alive. Keep my name alive.
That was done, yeah. That's one of the last things he said to me.
Is that right?
We, my wife and I, Jenny and I, and of course Barbara, and we were very close friends. And we knew Don was probably not going to make it. But he didn't want us to see him. He didn't want us to see him, yeah. Wasting away as he was. I think when he passed, I think he was 130 pounds or something like that. But one of the last things he said to me was, "Keep my name alive."
Yeah, yeah.
And then when he died, the day he died, he said, "Okay." He told Barbara, his wife, he said, "I'm going to go see Larry." That was his son, Larry, who died a number of years ago.
Yeah.
Wow. He was quite a guy.
Yeah. So many guys gave him nicknames, like the Merchant of Venom, Mr. Warmth. I mean, but you know what? If you really did get to know this man, he was just the sweetest man on the planet. Am I right?
Yeah, he was. It's what people don't know about him. But we had a conversation part of the city we live in. Jane Fonda lives in this area. And she said she was always afraid of Don, of running into him. And we said, if Don thought he offended you, he'd feel terrible.
He'd feel terrible.
He would. He was all done. It's a legal term. It's the assumption of risk. But when you go into see Don Rickles in a nightclub,
it's assumption of risk.
It's a badge of honor to be. I remember there was one time, Ginny and I, Don was in the main room at the Sahara in Vegas, which is where he played, and we're sitting in the booth with Barbara and he's picking on this guy, picking on that guy, this woman, that woman. And there's this guy in the front, very front row, has one of the worst hair pieces I've ever seen. It looked like an animal died on this guy's head. And Don keeps going back, and I'm going like, Don. And I'm trying to signal him. He walks by, and he looks down, and he says, "No one would ever guess, sir."
That's awesome. I mean, to be insulted by him, I mean, like, you know, for people that, you know, especially in the business, it was an honor for a lot of people, especially those roasts and so forth, to be roasted by him and to be insulted by him. That was, I must have seen him a couple dozen times, and I was up in Milwaukee, and he knew I was there, and I was in Vegas with him too, and he called me out, and he goes, I just want to call my good friend Dave Pliers here from Chicago, from WGN Radio, and everyone clapped. Nobody knows who I was, but it was whatever. They gave me a nice clap, and he looks at me, and he goes, "I appreciate you coming. I know you have a busy schedule." And then he rolled his eyes and looked backwards, and I thought, yes. Yes. That's all I wanted was to be busted Don Rickles.
Oh, yeah.
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 But now, you know, when you two, you know, became friends, it really started with your wives. It started with Ginny and Barbara, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. Ginny knew Barbara before Barbara was married to Don. Ginny was dating this agent, and he was Don's agent, and Barbara was this agent's secretary. His name was Jack Gilardi.
Mm-hmm.
He was with the GAC.
Yep.
And she would talk. So we're in Vegas. Ginny and I are married. We got married in 1963. So we're in Vegas. This is maybe 1966, something like that. And she said, and of course, I was in the main room, I guess, at probably the Desert Inn. And Don's in the lounge at the Sahara. Mm-hmm. So Ginny said, we're both there at the same time. Ginny said, "I'm going to call Barbara, and we'll have to get together, and we'll have dinner or something between shows." And I said, "Great, yeah." I never met Don. I knew of Don, of course, but I never met him.
Yeah.
So we go in and we went into like a cafeteria at the Sahara, and I'm talking to Barbara and Jenny's talking to Don, and we're waiting to go into his 3 o'clock in the morning show in the lounge. And Don, he's going backstage to get dressed. So Ginny and I are walking with Barbara into the lounge. And Ginny said, "He's the sweetest man in the world. We were talking, and they just had their daughter Mindy,
mm.
and
mm-hmm.
And you know, he's tired of being on the road. He just wants to get home with his family. And I said, "Well, honey, you know, his act is a little different than." She said, "Well, you always say that about other comedians." Okay, she said. So I think he's just wonderful. So okay, so we go and they put us in the very front row in the lounge. Don comes out. First thing he says, the stammering idiot from Chicago's in the audience with his hooker wife from Bayonne, New Jersey.
Oh my god! Oh my god! So was Jenny stunned or was
her jaw fell? I'd like to tell you, but anyway, we became great friends.
We're talking to the legendary Bob Newhart, and there's more after your look at your Friday night traffic.
Every time you travel with your wife, you always seem to travel with Bob and Jenny Newhart. Is there a reason for that?
Well, yeah, because he pays for everything.
No, he doesn't.
No, not really. No, I travel with Newhart because Bob and I have nothing in common. Bob, to me, is, you know, like it's like being in a room with a dead fly.
All right, State Player back with you on 720 WGN. TV legend Bob Newhart is joining us as we talk about the friendship that he had with Don Rickles. And you and Don, you guys spent, you know, you traveled together. And you know, it's funny, like, you're Catholic, St. Ignatius, Loyola grad. Don was Jewish. You guys went to the Vatican, and he always talked about, you know, going to Catholic Mass, and it was very complicated. And you know, I went up and got the cookie, which you're talking about the host. And he goes, "You know, we just go to the synagogue and write a check, and then we're out of there. Like, you know, you're Catholics, it's the organ and it's this and whatever." But he was always fascinated by the Catholic Church.
We celebrate Jewish holidays with Don, the Seders and things like that. We go to their house and read from the books, and have the bitter herbs and do the whole, and Don, and then we went to see the Pope. I didn't make arrangements. I was going to make arrangements to maybe, you know, see the Pope with a smaller audience,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't know if Don would like it, so. It turns out Carol O'Connor happened to be in Rome at the time, so he arranged for us along with 7,500 other people to see the Pope. Well, Don never let me forget about that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Newhart, you know, used all his pull within the Vatican. And
that's awesome. Well, you know what's funny, though? I mean, but he needed you as much as you needed him on these trips, too, because you as an accountant, you figured out all the trips. You reconciled it. You converted money. Like, you were the guy that was kind of in charge of these excursions, weren't you?
Yeah, but between Barbara and myself, an airport, maybe Heathrow in London. I forget which one it was, but I was going to go cash some money, change it into English pounds, and then we're going on to Venice, and so get an Italian lira, and Barbara was going to check on the plane. So the two of us wandered off, and Jenny and Don are there with our luggage, and I walked away, and I said, "Barbara," and I said to Barbara, I said, "You know, if we left right now, if we went back to the States, they would still be here 7 years from now."
Sitting on the luggage.
Sitting on the trunks, wondering what happened to us.
That's awesome. One time,
we were in London. I'll never forget this. We went over for I think it was Prince Charles was having a fundraiser. So Jenny and I flew over. We were invited to participate, as was Cary Grant and a lot of other people. And now we're in the plane waiting for the plane to leave Heathrow and go back to L.A. And I'm sitting with Cary Grant, right? And Jenny said, I'm going to get... I want to get some curios for the kids. You know, whenever we went away, we'd bring the kids back toys of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And Cary Grant said, "Yeah, okay." He said, "Yeah, Bob and I we'll look over the luggage. Don't worry about it, Jenny." And I thought to myself, Cary Grant just called me Bob.
Isn't that awesome? Isn't that awesome? See, even as an actor, as a comedian, as successful you are, the people that you grew up with and watched in the movies or on television, whatever, I mean, that's still an exciting moment, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Wow, yeah. Yeah, Cary Grant.
Wow. Wow, that's awesome. Dinners. You guys did so many dinners together, too. I mean, it just must have been nonstop. And I think about this. I mean, you guys did it for... You know, over five decades of going out, yeah. Traveling together and so forth. I mean, you guys were inseparable.
Yeah, the first one was, I think we went to the Caribbean. Then we went to, I'll tell you, our favorite city was Venice. We go to Venice whenever we had a chance. It was just, we'd be in the square, St. Mark's Square. And having a beer or whatever, and just watching the people walk by, and it was just—that was our favorite city. That was our favorite city.
Nice, nice, very nice, very, very nice. You know, Don, and both you and Don were frequent guests on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and.
Yeah.
I think those were the moments, like when you were Don or some of the legends in comedy, you would, like, I was too young and, you know, I was born in the late 60s. So like I was a kid, but I would sneak back downstairs and kind of peek around the corner and watch the TV because there's legends on TV that would just make you laugh out loud. My parents never knew it, but even with, it's true. But even, you know, with you, not only did you, were a guest, but you hosted the show. You actually were doing a few weeks in a row when Carson was in one of his salary disputes. I think it was 1970. You know,
that's right. Yeah,
and,
that's right. Yeah,
and you got to do 3 weeks almost as an audition to take that spot.
Well, I didn't realize it at the time, but apparently NBC and Johnny were at odds, mm-hmm. And NBC's position was, we're going to find somebody else. So they tried me and several other people. David Brenner, I think, was one.
Sure.
And I didn't know this was going on. So I filled in. It was in New York. Johnny was still in New York, whatever that would have been, and probably in the 70s somewhere. And I did 3 weeks. And at the end of the 3 weeks, I mean, I was exhausted.
It was a lot.
I was absolutely worn out from having to read the books or pieces of the book for that the author had written and trying to get notes on the. And this man did it for 30 years. I mean, how he, you know, I was a wet noodle, you know, but at the end of this 3 weeks, and this man did it for 30 years.
You were one of the top three most frequent guest hosts. Like, it was, you're in the top three. Like, it was Joan Rivers, Joey Bishop, and you. And you hosted 87 times, I believe. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Not a slacker either. I mean, they must have loved what you did, of course. And then you had the hit series, so why not have you there? More with the legendary Bob Newhart as we celebrate the legacy of Don Rickles after the top stories from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. You're listening to 720 WGN.
That's the longest milking of applause I have ever seen in my life, standing out there. What is it bowing and bowing?
I don't have $27 billion.
Went up, huh?
Well, I need everything I can get. I'm not like you and Newhart standing on the highway going, God, no more money, no more money, please.
Day player on 720 WGN. We're talking to comedy icon Bob Newhart. So, Bob, you know, 5 years since Don left us, you are going to be 93. It is the 50th anniversary of the Bob Newhart Show this fall. It is the 40th anniversary of Newhart. And this radio station turns 100 this month. You know, amazing that this legendary place has been around for a century, wouldn't you think? And you around almost a century.
Well, when I saw the promo, which I just read, I thought to myself that the WGN is 100 years old, and 7 years later I was born.
That's right. Right in the beginning there. I know.
Oh, wow, we kind of.
You're kind of along that same
great,
path.
There's such great memories of Wally Phillips and Jack Brickhouse and so many yourself, and just so many.
You have memories of being here at WGN Radio in the early days when Eddie Hubbard was
that's,
at the mic.
That's the name I was. I couldn't think.
Yeah.
If Eddie was with WIND or whether it was GN.
Yeah, he was here at GN. Yeah, and I think you performed here. You performed in the lobby on his show or something in the Tribune Tower.
That's right.
Did
that's
a little
right.
stand up here, right?
Yeah, it was. We were doing the local Emmys, and they asked me to. I was on Dan Sorkin's TV show that that didn't last very long.
Right, right.
And I had done the Abe Lincoln routine, and they asked me to do, because it was mostly advertising people, and so I did the Abe Lincoln routine, and it was well received. And Alex Dreyer, I remember, was the host, and he said, "What do you mean there's no talent in Chicago?" And then as a result of that, I got a Man on the Street show
right.
on ABC with Tom Racine. And I thought I'd knew going to heaven. I mean, I wrote the material for Tom and myself, and we'd do the show. I think it was on at 8:30 in the morning, opposite Captain Kangaroo and Today, so that gives you an idea how many people were
yeah.
watching.
Yeah,
and then I was on the Columbus Park golf course by noon, and I thought I had died and gone to heaven. I said, "This doesn't get any better than this."
No, no,
you know. I'm making $400 a week and playing golf every day.
Hello, on the lakefront, which is spectacular. I know. You mentioned Jack Brickhouse, Wally Phillips. I know you spent time with Roy Leonard. What are some of those memories? You know, I'm sure a lot of those were probably going over to our Bradley Place studios that were not in downtown. But I know you also spent some time in the city and the studios in the city as well.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. GN was just it was a part of your life. It was. You know, 720. When you said 720, my God, you know, the number of times I tuned to 720.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned Jack Brickhouse. Like, people remember him as, you know, Cubs and Bears and Sox and, you know, and the fights. But he interviewed presidents and he interviewed celebrities. I mean, he wore many hats at the station.
Yeah. Yeah. He was. There's a statue, isn't there, Jack?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's right by the Tribune Tower. Yeah, no question, no question. You know, I've been on the station a mere 10 years this month, just a baby. But you've been my guest like a couple times a year over the last 8 or 9 years. And I'm so grateful that you always take the time for me, for WGN,
okay,
and for your
hometown. I enjoy it. I always enjoy it.
Well, and you know, it's funny, like, this is where you got your start. Like, I love the stories about, you know, you were an accountant here in Chicago, and, you know, you and your buddy were kind of doing crank phone calls and so forth, and all of a sudden 1959 comes around and you got a record deal. Like, how did that even pivot for you? That, you know, was that even in your wheelhouse that's what you were going to eventually do?
Well, I'm trying to remember. I worked for, in Chicago, I was an accountant for, U.S. Gypsum and the Glidden Company.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was U.S. Gypsum. They wanted to promote me and send me to their plant in Poland Springs, Maine. And I thought to myself, I know how cold it gets in Chicago.
Yeah, my God. Yeah, hello.
How much colder does it get in Maine?
Just a little bit.
And I said, thank you very much, but I got to try this comedy thing. I got to see if it's going to work or not.
And you say work or not. My God, it was it was the number one, still, like, one of the top-selling albums, the Button Down Mind, still one of the top-selling albums of all time.
That's what they say. It's still, and it holds up. The material holds up, which it's just been a great time. It's just been a great life, a great career.
Didn't Guns N' Roses kind of challenge you to that top spot?
Yeah, they. I had the number one album, yeah. The Button on Mind, and then I had the number two album, the second album, which is, I think, Strikes Back, mm-hmm. I think was. Mm-hmm. And then Strikes Back, or Behind the Button on Mind, whatever it was, anyway. The number two album became number one, and the number one album became number two. And that was for like 40 weeks or something on the Billboard charts. And that was a record. No one had ever equaled that record until Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
And then they had the number one and number two album for more weeks than I had had it. And I always said, you know, well, at least it went to a friend. You know, it went to Axe. And
right.
Axe and I, you know, we talk almost every day on the phone.
I would think so. among friends. I love that. Hey, before I let you go, I have to tell you, somebody posted a Coldwell Banker listing this week on a bunch of Chicago blogs in the Bob and Emily Hartley building, the apartment building.
Did you really? About that. Yeah. Well, you know, I think I've mentioned this before, but we shot the opening scenes.
Yeah.
In Chicago, and the producers, Dave Davis and Lorenzo Music, they weren't familiar with Chicago and the L system. And so what I would do, and if people can still watch the beginning of the show, I take the Ravenswood L, and I take it until it got on the ground, which were around Evanston, or even, you know, some of the Lakeshore cities, you know. And then I would walk back about 50 blocks every day. I mean, I miss my stop every day, and I would walk back 50 blocks to the Sheridan Road apartment.
You went left, you went right, you went east, you went west. It was a great shot of the city, but yeah, it was, if you're trying to follow it as a Chicagoan, you're like, what? Yeah, so,
I mean, would you want a psychologist to...
No, to no directions.
Stop every day?
No, I want no directions from you. No, not at all. But your apartment is going for $350,000. That was what was posted this week.
Is that what it is? Well.
Yeah. Well, look at that. Look at that from years ago. Let's do the one thing that we have to do. Go Cubs. Let's have a great season. And I'll talk to you in the fall around your birthday, my friend.
Okay. All right, Dave, I look forward to it.
Thank you. The legendary.
As I do each year.
As you do each year. That's right. Thank you, my friend. Thanks for spending the time with us tonight.
Thank you, Dave.
All right. The legendary Bob Newhart. Some reflections from Don Rickles' manager, Tony Opitasano. Some great clips. And my interview with the late, great Don Rickles right after this here on 720 WGN. Dave Player on 720 WGN. We're talking about the legacy of the late, great Don Rickles, keeping his name alive and celebrating his birthday, which is on May 8th. Here is a little Don Rickles on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show.
Now, let's talk about you going on the road. You haven't been on the road on a regular basis for some time, have you?
Well, no, my car broke down.
On two.
But, no, I've been on. The big treat is I'm going to be with the big guy. The big guy to me is Frank Sinatra. Yeah. I know. I'm going to see him Thursday night out at Malibu, and I'm going to tell him that you don't need the lousy dinner.
Right.
And, and then I suggest you call your family.
Right.
And see that they get police protection. I really do.
Now,
I know.
Who opens for who?
Well, naturally, Frank opens for me.
I see.
I told that joke to Frank. And ever since then, I can't find my aunt in the Bronx.
And that was Don Rickles on Johnny Carson. Here's a little Rickles with David Letterman.
Speaking of Las Vegas, I guess it was in the springtime. I was there with our producer, Robert Morton, and Peter LaSalle.
Yes.
And we came to see you at the desert.
And we had dinner, desert. And you saw the show.
Yeah,
you
we saw the show. It was great fun.
You came in your little Popeye hat and your sneakers. And,
that's right.
And he stood in the corner and went, oh, geez, I don't like crowds. man's making $6 billion a week. I'm sorry. Seven.
Yeah.
And look at the way the whole crew, especially the Chinaman, he's going, whoa. Anyway, I say that with endearment. We need you people. Yeah. So the Jews have a place to eat on Sunday.
Exactly.
What could you do to me? Anyway, so we had a... Hold it down in the balcony, otherwise Lincoln's gonna get it.
Okay. And here's Jimmy Kimmel on Rickles' last series, Dinner with Don.
And I'm sitting here with you. We go back a long time.
We do.
And it's great the way your career has moved up, you know. In fact, you've gotten very important, and it's starting to bother me.
Yeah.
This is the eighth appearance you've made on this show.
I'll drop my pants and fire a rocket.
I grew up in Las Vegas. My parents went to see you. My parents met you before I met you.
Yeah.
And I said, well, tell him I said hello and ask him if he ever heard of me. And you said, what's his name? And she said, Jimmy Kimmel. And he said, no, I don't think I have. And why, how would I know him? And she said, well, he just said he'd heard of you, so maybe you'd heard of him. And you responded according to her. He went, schmuck.
Yeah, must have had the crowd roaring.
All right, it's Dave Plyer back with you here on 720 WGN. So legendary comedian Don Rickles left us in 2017. He was America's king of the insult, aimed at audiences in general and celebrities in particular. I had seen Don perform live nearly two dozen times and interviewed him backstage in Vegas a year before his passing. Now, for about 5 years, we always went backstage after a show to share some stories, have a few drinks with Don, his wife Barbara, his manager Tony O. And when we were ready to leave, in those last few years, he said, do me a favor, keep my name alive. And he said it to everybody he knew. And as big as he was, he wanted people to remember him. It's a big reason I do this every single year around Don's birthday. So keep my name alive was a familiar phrase to many of Don's friends. Here's a quick clip of Jimmy Kimmel talking about that very same request.
He gave me advice, and good advice, not the advice people give you just to hear themselves giving you advice. He would always say, keep my name alive, which he'd tell me to keep his name alive, which I thought was funny because, you know, I was like, you're Don Rickles. You keep my name alive.
Right. So Don's manager, Tony O, who was also Sinatra's manager, and I became good friends with him over the years. And I had asked him about the time he first met Don Rickles.
I met Don in Lake Tahoe when I was still a performer. 1980, we were both working at Harris. He was, as he used to say, he was in the big room with Sister Sledge, and I was working at a mini showroom called State Line Cabaret, and that's when we first met. And I started working with him officially, helped got him on the show when the Desert Inn did a big thing for Sinatra on his 77th birthday. And so Don was on that show, and that kind of worked out. I was working with Elliot, as you remember, Elliot Wiseman.
Oh, yeah.
In those days. And so officially, the relationship business-wise kind of started with Don in 1993, 94, so it was around that. As a matter of fact, the last time both Frank and Don were in Chicago together was to open the United Center. In October of 94, I think it was, something like that.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. And to be witness to all that must have been absolutely incredible. And you've got a great story I want you to share, because you've told it to me before, about Frank and Don having dinner in the Pump Room in Chicago.
Yeah, it was a funny night. It was like the Last Supper, which was normal, you know, for Frank. Every night was like New Year's Eve. And we were sitting at this long table, people on both sides. We were about 12 or 14 people. And kibitzing, talking back and forth. And Frank had ordered a minute steak, believe it or not. I mean, he could afford anything he wanted, but he liked minute steak.
Okay.
And they brought it with a little small bunch of French fries. And the waiter brought a brand new bottle of ketchup over to the table. And Frank opened it, and he was trying to get the ketchup to come out. Never thought of sticking the knife in there to loosen it up. And he's banging on the bottom of the bottle, trying to get the ketchup to come out. And finally, out of sheer frustration, and I think also to try to get a laugh, he threw it over his shoulder, because we were sitting against the wall. He threw it over his shoulder and hit the wall and went down on the floor. And everyone's looking like, oh, geez, he's in a bad mood of one. Yeah. And typical Rickles. Rickles looked across the table and said, Frank, would you pass the ketchup?
He's the only guy that could get away with that, you know, over the years.
He got away with a lot of stuff.
He did, but always with Frank, you know? Always got away with it, whether he was on television, on stage.
they pushed each other's buttons. Frank used to like to do things to Don to make him nervous because Don never knew whether Frank was teasing or not.
Don's manager, Tony Opodisano. Top stories are next here on 720 WGN.
All right, if I had to name my favorite comedian of all time, there would only be one name, and that would be the legendary Don Rickles. I've seen Don perform live over a dozen and a half times, from Chicago to Vegas, Atlantic City to Los Angeles, and even Milwaukee. And I got to know Don over the last 8 years of his life and got the invitation of a lifetime when Don and his manager, Tony Opodisano, who also managed Frank Sinatra, invited me backstage in Vegas to interview Don back in 2016. It was his last radio interview before he left us in early 2017. And as we celebrate Don's birthday, here is my conversation with the legendary Don Rickles.
His mother and father are sitting on the porch in Nebraska going, "Why doesn't Johnny call?" And his father is not that way. Your dad is what, about 6'2"?
No.
Your father, try to think.
Yes, my dad.
See, when you get that rich, you forget the family. He's so busy in court all day long going, "Well, who wants to sue?" You got a lovely wife now, Joanna, who I saw.
I'm still trying to get the hassock from the last marriage. Look.
Now, John, you've had, not lucky in love, but now, thank God, you've met the woman of your dreams. Really.
Well.
Hey, folks, we don't know. He just calls Ed and I and says, "I met the woman of my dreams." And for his success, we go, "Fine, John." Ned, you've had, never lucky in love, but you're both handsome guys. I'm married 9 years. I want to be with you guys so bad.
But you didn't
get
married.
I got a Jewish wife that just lays in bed and goes, "Help me with the jewelry." Now, don't write letters. You taught me that. Don't write letters. Those of you in the Jewish world, if you are a Jew, I am proud. They always say we're rich. That's baloney. We're human beings, all of us. And I wish peace, shalom, to all of us.
Now, you didn't get married, though, until you were late in life.
Well, till I was what?
Well, I mean,
I was 38 years old before
I got married. Now, that's kind of long, isn't it?
Hey, but we discussed this before, and Ed, you guys got married, your first marriages, and I'm not being sarcastic.
But 38?
Well, I got news. When you're kids, you come out of college. I never went to college. I come up the hard way. You guys just skyrocketed. But I came out of the neighborhood, and they went, "What am I to broad?" And the broad was always like me, But actually, what happened was I met the most darling lady in life late night because I worked with strippers, exotic dancers, as we call them today. With the cobra coming out of the basket, and the cobra went, "I want to be with you." And the broad went, "Challenge me, challenge me." It's a long story. I was on the road a lot, laying in bed watching a moth die on the lamp, And when you get like that, you find yourself on a street corner going, "Miss." And then I met my wife, who said, "I'm not some perverted jerk, I'm a person." And now she's sitting at home, just laying there, going, "He's so rich, he's so rich." And my kid's skipping through the house going, "Make more gold, mommy, make more gold." See, they always say Jewish people have a lot of money. You're an Irish guy, right?
That's right.
Well, you never would have money because you're too busy spending it on beer. You just sit around the house in your bathroom going,
We're backstage in Las Vegas at the Orleans Hotel and Casino with a comedy legend that has entertained us for nearly 65 years. He's an actor, a comedian, an author, an Emmy Award winner. Don has performed for 4 U.S. presidents, traveled the world with his lovely wife Barbara and his best friends Bob and Ginny Newhart. I thought I'd drop his name in there.
Yeah. No, he'll check that out.
I'm sure he will. And that is the legendary Don Rickles. Don, good evening and happy 90th birthday to you.
I always say me and Harry Truman, May 8th.
May 8th, that's the day. And I wanted to talk about your very beginnings. The very beginnings that developed into the Don Rickles we know today. You were the class clown, not great in school. You were the president of your high school class. Where did you get your sense of humor?
Well, I really don't know. My mother was not a person that did humor. She had great personality. My father was a terrific salesman, but not a jokester, so to speak. It just came, from being around guys. I was always, even in the Navy, and well, that's further on in my life, but when I was a very young guy, I always kidded around in school, and it became me. I really don't have a basis to say, well, my Uncle Charlie or something, but it's not so. I just, my mother encouraged it, you know, to kid around, not dreaming I would be doing
sure.
this.
Friends, family members,
yeah,
that
right.
type of thing.
I'd get up at the party, at the bar mitzvah, at the wedding, and say something. About...
Now, you left the Navy at the end of the war, and thank you for your service, by the way. Oh. You went to school at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, class of 48, with the likes of Grace Kelly, Jason Robards, Anne Bancroft, Charles Durning. Very prestigious school.
It was, and I was very fortunate because they said I'd never attain that because I was always kind of loud and strong. And it was a guy called Phil Loeb, rest his soul. Look how I remember his name yeah. now. He's a great director, and he passed away. And he and I used to go, good evening, you know, from the stage, you know, and he'd say, take it easy, take it. He said, but never lose that energy. And that energy was the basis of my humor, and that helped me a great deal.
That and attitude.
Yeah. Well, see, my whole humor is based on not so much the joke, really, but, of course, it's the attitude of what I say.
You're not a joke teller. I mean,
no.
You know, I've heard you say,
you.
If you give me $1 million, go on and say, you know, you're a comedian, but you're not a joke teller. You did some impressions for a while.
Yes, I did.
In the early days.
Oh, God, yes.
But talking to the audience is really what made you who you are.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. And everything I've done to this very day, except for television, everything I've done on the stage is what I created in the car, in the house, the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's never been written on paper.
Right.
And I just added and added and kept saying it. Shame of performance.
Sure. And there was no Comedy Central. There was no Comedy Store, no Tonight Show when you got started. Comedians worked other venues. You worked burlesque houses and in strip clubs.
Yeah. I worked at what they call strip joints with the girls, Satina, taking off her clothes. And those days, there was not that much clothes taken off. And I was like the comedian in between,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
with the talking, again, talking to the audience and making stupid jokes and throwing in a few impressions. And that's how I kept going and joining terrible places, believe me.
And there are places, three names that I've always heard you talk about, and in your book, too. The three places were Slate Brothers, Murray Franklin's, and the Copacabana. The three names are always Johnny Carson, Frank Sinatra, and Dean Martin. And I want to first talk to you a little bit about the Slate Brothers.
Yeah, well, there was a guy called Henry Slate, rest his soul. He was a good guy, and I worked for, like, Peanuts, and I used to get dressed in the kitchen. You know, the fellow called Harry Gomes, rest his soul, who was with me for 40 years.
Yeah.
And he used to help me get dressed in the kitchen. I always wanted to wear a tuxedo. That was my thing.
Yeah. And a real bow tie.
Yeah. And I worked at, and it's like, it was like a little store.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I started to do what I do, making fun of people. And suddenly, stars started to show up, little by little, you know. And they said, oh, Sinatra was in the other night, and Rickles did blah, blah, blah. Or Charlton Heston came by, you know. And I used to do stuff about these and women and so forth. And it caught on, and it was exciting time.
Well, they wanted to be insulted by you. I mean, they caught on that was cool.
And you know, they used the word insult, and it's really an attitude. It's not mean spirited. I've never, in my opinion, never hurt anybody. You know, I never hit below the belt or anything. Even when it came to a mobsters who have come to see me in those days.
Sure.
And so. I made jokes about them, but they laughed because it was kind and it was funny.
And you
Mickey Cohn, he used to arrest us, so he used to come in and sit. I don't think Tony ever knew this. And he used to sit in the front with his dog. He had a dog, and he put the dog in the chair and sit there and laughed his hand on. And I would kid about the dog and so forth.
Of course you would.
That's what he did. He thought it was a riot.
That's great. And I know Murray Franklin's came along, and your mother, your dear mother, God rest her soul, played a big part in getting Frank to come see you at Murray Franklin's.
Yeah, well, she went up to Dolly, up at the Fontainebleau, I say, in the performance, and spoke to her and said, if you could get Frank to see my Donnie, she called me Donnie. And she said, don't Etta, it was her name. Don't worry, Etta, I'll take care of her. And sure enough, a couple of nights later, Frank came in with a few of his friends, and that was it, you know.
And Murray Franklin's was in Miami.
Yeah, it was, and when I say it on the stage, I think I'm kidding. It was a rocking chair. That was the theme, all rocking chairs. And to this day, well, Murray's in another world now, but In those days, he said, look at the crowd I'm drawing, meaning him. And I always went along with that.
He kind of felt like he was the Ed Sullivan, really, of Miami, didn't he?
Yeah. It was big shot. Yeah.
But this is where, you know, Frank Sinatra, nobody messed with Frank Sinatra.
It's all over, Frank. I know you don't like to hear that. It's gone.
They said, Frank Sinatra's here. I've never met him, you know. And I get the chill.
You'll excuse us, won't you?
Certainly, certainly. Marco Mangananzo was hurt.
Marco Mangananzo.
Fambino Bombazzo. 2 bullets in the head Thursday. Now this you don't believe. Excuse us, Johnny. You're from the Midwest. You're busy going. Is the truck loaded? Guido says hi. He hasn't had a chance to talk to you. And from Jersey City, your good friend, Bubani Umbatsa.
What's his alias?
He started his car. He started his car with your album on, and now he's a highway.
Where'd you get away with that so early?
Well, he enjoyed me. I mean, we could have been having dinner, as I always say, and he'd say, and you know, when I was in Europe, or boom, when I say, pass the rolls, and he'd say, pass the rolls, then he'd say, you know, and I said, Frank, I'm talking. And he'd start to laugh, his can off, he'd fall on the floor. When I talk, I said, pass the rolls, I don't care about Europe. And he loved it.
Dave Pryor, WGN.
I'm a nice guy, in spite of what you heard.
TV producers at the time thought you were too hot to handle, but on the night of October 7th, 1965, you made your first appearance on The Tonight Show, over 100 appearances, as we were saying, over 3 decades. How did you first meet Johnny? How did that all come about?
Well, it was in New York. I don't exactly know how we met, but he heard about me in the Elegant. That was the place my manager owned, and I was very successful there, and people used to come and see. So, you know, word got around, and then his people asked if I'd come on the show. And we hit it off great. And from the very day we met, if the paper said, that's the time when, if the paper said, we're going to talk about trains tonight, and he'd look at the paper and said, how's your mother, you know? And I'd say, you never liked my mother. Why do you bring that up? And we'd start to do 20 minutes about mothers, you know?
Yeah.
And your mother never liked me. Why is that? And he was great. He picked right up on it. And it was that fun.
And he was the kind of guy that made you funny. He was a great setup artist, and he wanted you to shine.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And Johnny was pretty much, socially, was kind of a loner, you know?
Yeah,
we went out socially occasionally, but he wasn't a guy that participated. He was uncomfortable with a lot of people, and yet when the light went on, he was the best.
What's the worst place you ever worked? I mean, when you were
here.
Just starting. Every time you travel with your wife, you always seem to travel with Bob and Ginny Newhart. Is there a reason for that?
Well, yeah, because
I know
he
you've
pays
been friends
for everything.
No, he doesn't.
No, not really. No, I travel with Newhart because Bob and I have nothing in common. Bob, to me, is, you know, like, it's like being in a room with a dead fly.
Don't worry, Ed. You're going to be big.
This ain't, eventually, if Johnny retires, are you going to retire?
Certainly.
No, you're not. No, you're not. I know what your wife spends. You're not retiring. He's got a wife that just sits up in Bel Air. She was an airline hostess, had nothing. Now she goes, send in another box.
Now, I know, and who opens for who?
Well, naturally, Frank opens for me.
Oh, I see.
I told that joke to Frank. And ever since then, I can't find my aunt in the Bronx.
And the Bronx, eh?
In the Bronx.
Same with David Letterman, and I know it was...
Yeah, Letterman had that thing, too.
Yeah. Did you, in the earlier days of knowing Johnny, did you hang out with him more really in the 60s a little bit more?
No, it was never hanging out with Johnny. It was a dinner date or doing the show and have dinner with him afterwards.
Okay.
Or when his birthday came, we were at the house and a few people, but he was very, very, very closed with his life.
Yeah. Do you have a... not so much a popular moment, but do you have a favorite moment out of, you know, 100 plus appearances on the show that you love talking about an experience you had on the air with Johnny? Like, what was your favorite?
Well, I can't see. There were so many wonderful times.
Yeah.
There was a time when he threw me into the pool.
The Japanese.
That was talked about a great deal.
Yeah.
And there was one other time when I...
Well, with Sinatra, you know, when Frank was on the show, and he didn't make a lot of appearances on The Tonight Show, but then you walked out on stage. You came.
Yeah, that was another time. It's on the film, in the show here tonight.
One of my favorite moments of all time. Share with us that story that Frank told about you. You weren't married to Barbara yet. You were dating a pretty girl, and you walked over to Frank's table.
You know, it's funny you should say that, because the wife said to me upstairs, "Don, stop telling that story."
It's really,
I swear
it's
to
the
God,
best story.
Everybody
I love that
in the
story.
World, the newspaper people, everybody picked up on that story. One guy said it happened in Shanghai. One guy said it happened in China. One guy said it happened in North Korea. I mean, from a little story like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true. The punchline is, you know, it's with this girl, blah, blah, blah. I wanted to score with her, and he was in the coat in the sands in the lounge. I went over and said, "He called me Bullethead." I said, "Frank," he said, "what is Bullethead?" I said, "If you could come over and help me out with the girl, blah, 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 blah." "Oh, okay, not right away, but don't worry, I'll, okay." And so I sat down with her, and she said, "Do you know Frank Sinatra?" I said, "Oh, sweetheart, come on." But sure enough, she was getting all supports there. He came over and said, "Hey, Don, how are you?" And I said, "Hey, Frank, can't you see I'm eating?" And like you, he fell off.
Yeah.
Fell out living. Then he had the security cops, which nobody even knew, pick me up and carry me out.
There was another story, and I've only heard you tell it once, and I don't even remember what show it was on. And I was a kid when I heard the story, and you were talking about being with Jilly Rizzo. And after a performance, you guys were sitting down having some vodka, some Jack Daniels, whatever it was at the time. And there was thunder outside and lightning. Share with us that story.
Yeah, well, it was in Italy. We were sitting in a hotel and at the big bay window. You know, boom, 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 boom. Lights were going, thunder and rain. And frankly, we were all having vodka, just the three of us. And he kept saying, "Tell those reporters to stop." and it was raining. I said, "Well, Frank," I said, "no, don't check me around. I want you to go out, you and Jillian. Tell them to stop it. I want to stop." Because the lightning was coming into them. And we had tuxedos on.
Yeah.
We went out soaking wet in the rain. "Now, you people, stop it. Stop it. Just stop it."
What would you like me to tell the next generation and more of these young kids about Don Rickles?
That was a guy that... was interested in making the people laugh. The people and to do things they understood and to do things that are happening in their life and projected and exaggerated. That's it.
"I'll trade you laughter for love. I'll trade you one for the other. Laughter for love. What can you lose? Some madness from earth, and for whatever it's worth, whether you like it or not, I'll give you all that I've got. I'll trade you sunlight for gold. One shines as bright as the other. Love is pure gold. To the sun, light. This is my life. For all of my life. And you are part of this life I live. I swear that it's true. I love to do what I do. To share this laughter I give. For just a little love from..."